My reading, or my introduction to our reading today, is a fairly lengthy one, and it has to do with something I've learned about over the years, namely, how to read a story mythologically, or metaphorically, symbolically, psychologically, poetically, spiritually. All those terms come to pretty much the same thing for me. Joseph Campbell, the encyclopedic scholar of mythology and world religions, who became known to general audiences after his death through Bill Moyer's PBS interviews with him in a six-part series titled The Power of Myth, Joseph Campbell was the most important teacher for me in regard to this, how to read stories mythologically. Campbell died in 1987 at the age of 83, but a few years prior to that, from 1980 to 1982, I had the privilege of organizing lectures and sermons for him at the Fountain Street Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I was on the ministerial staff from 1978 to 2001. For three consecutive years, Campbell would give marvelous lectures to rapt audiences of between 500 and 600 people in the sanctuary of that church. And I had the privilege of both introducing him and then fielding questions for him from the audience following his lectures. And as you can imagine, it was certainly one of the high points of my life. But it was Campbell then who opened up for me a whole different way of taking religion, so that I was able to find new meaning in much of what I might otherwise have found off-putting or even rationally absurd and consequently have thrown away. A baby in bathtub type of thing. So Campbell, for example, through him, I discovered how to read the stories of Christmas mythologically and therefore not fretting at all about their historical value. Indeed, if I were to judge the birth narratives of Jesus of Nazareth from an historical standpoint, I would find that they have hardly any historical value at all. The birth narratives that you find, for example, in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke are completely different from each other. And the other canonical Gospels of Mark and John do not even have birth narratives. So I would judge that these canonical biblical birth stories of Jesus, as well as the many non-canonical birth stories of him, have really little to do with the historical person of Jesus of Nazareth, except that he was the outstanding personality around whom these birth stories accumulated as they accumulate around other spiritual teachers and hero figures. As Joseph Campbell has put it, it's as if these miraculous birth stories are floating in the air, waiting to attach themselves to a spiritual teacher, a hero, or some figure of note. Now, there are perhaps some fragments of historical fact here and there in these birth narratives and Christmas stories, but it would be difficult to unravel and separate the historical threads from the legendary threads. And more to the point from my perspective is, why make the effort? From my perspective, it's not what's important about these stories anyway. From my point of view, what we have in these birth narratives of the Holy Child of Bethlehem are truths of a different kind. Not, first of all, truths of history, but truths of the heart, the soul, the imagination, and the human spirit. So this morning, as we come near to Christmas, I'm going to read the Christmas story that more than any other has captured the human imagination, the story from the Gospel of Luke of the birth of the Christ child. And so now, taking this story mythologically and inwardly, everything in the story applies to us. It's our story, so that we are the mother, Mary, overcome at the birth of her firstborn child and pondering the meaning of this birth. And we are Joseph, attentive to his partner and no doubt amazed at the miracle of birth that has occurred. And we are the angels, bearers of glad tidings, joyously spreading the good news to all who will hear. We are the shepherds, initially frightened by such news, but open to it, curious about it, and drawn to explore for ourselves what this birth might mean. And finally, if you have ears to hear, We are ourselves that holy child, and it is the birth of our own spiritual life and its potential that we are witnessing and celebrating, and I'll speak more about this in the sermon. So now, the Christmas story from the Gospel of Luke, the second chapter, the first 20 verses. And it came to pass in those days, see already, you see the writer is looking back at some distance. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were so afraid. And the angel said unto them, "Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And there shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger." And suddenly, there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward all." And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, "Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing that has come to pass, which the Lord has made known unto us." And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, even as it was told unto them. Since Christmas is but 5 days away, I thought this Sunday I would speak with you about the two main symbols of the Christmas season, the Christ child and Santa Claus. In Grand Rapids, Michigan, the part of the country where I spent most of my life, each year during the Christmas season, a large advertisement would appear in the local newspaper, sponsored by a number of the local churches. It was an advertisement in which two large pictures were placed side by side, similar in structure to the pictures that were present in the opening slide for today's service. But these pictures had a very different message than the one that I will be giving. One picture was that of Santa Claus in typical pose, red suit and wide black belt, fronting a large belly, laughing face, twinkling eyes, full white beard, and white hair curling from underneath his red and white hat. And then, in a frame right next to him, equal in size, was a typical representation of the adult Jesus. Full brown beard, long flowing brown hair, white gown or robe, unlined face, serious penetrating eyes, right hand formed in the sign of peace, and a halo of light surrounding his head. These two pictures were placed side by side in the advertisement, And above them, in large bold letters, was the question, whose birthday is this anyway? And the additional comment, we believe the important news at Christmas is not who comes down the chimney, but who comes down from heaven. Now, when I would see this yearly advertisement in the Saturday evening papers, I would give, as my wife can attest, my traditional Christmas season groan and exclaim, though not quite in these words, why does the Christian religion, or why do certain parts of the Christian religion, think it has to pit these two main figures of Christmas against each other? And actually, the symbolism in the advertisement isn't right in the first place. It's not the adult Jesus who is at the center of the Christmas celebration. It's the child that is at the center. The child of Christmas, the Christ child, the eternal child, the babe of Mary, the holy child of Bethlehem. It's the birth scene, the manger scene. It's the creche that is at the center, not the adult Jesus. But this aside, why does the Christian religion or certain parts of it think it has to pit these two main images of Christmas against each other? Why can't we simply celebrate and honor both these images of Christmas? And I think you'll agree that these are the two main images or symbols of Christmas, the Holy Child or the Christ Child and Santa Claus. Now, the Christ Child is thought of as a religious symbol and Santa Claus as a secular symbol. But both are at the center of Christmas, and both have to do with the child, and both belong to the heart. And I work with both of them in the same way, for both of them are symbolic images. And what they have to do with, though in somewhat different ways, is the core of the individual, what a person is at heart. That divine and holy child there in the manger, surrounded by animals, protected and adored by parents, praised by angels, discovered by shepherds, worshiped by wise men, and threatened by a jealous king. That divine child upon whom the light shines and who is the center of all the attention, that divine child represents our own most innermost and authentic self, the essential self that we are striving to become. And it represents as well, particularly for parents, the divine birth and the potential of the newborn child. That babe in the manger, that child ruler, represents the core of ourselves and of every person born into this world. This, I believe, is what is felt and honored in that divine and miraculous birth at Bethlehem. It's a picture of our own divine birth and the birth of our spirit, a picture, an image of the miraculousness and preciousness of human life. And it's a call to wake up to the miracle of our own life and of life about us. And because through the course of the year and through the course of a life, we grow weary. The world gets worn and shorn of its beauty and value. And so we need to be reminded. We need to be resuscitated. And thus, each year at Christmas, the divine child needs to be born again, so that we might also be born again into the divinity and holiness of our own lives. We need to be recalled to our better selves. Thus, the Holy Child at Christmas is a symbol of our most authentic being and possibility, as well as that of every child ever born. Well, now, what about Santa Claus? Who is Santa Claus, symbolically speaking? Well, Santa Claus is not so much a direct symbol of our true self, but Santa is a symbol of the one who recognizes our true self and honors it. And this is what every child who is acquainted with Santa Claus knows. Every child knows that Santa Claus is the one who knows you and respects you and cares about you and loves you in the deepest way. Santa Claus knows who you really are. He knows what you really want. He knows what you really need. Santa Claus doesn't have his own agenda mixed into yours, not the real Santa, The real Santa doesn't ask you to be anything other than who you are and what you could be. He cares about you. He cares about your deepest and truest and most real self. Santa Claus, you see, is the good father, the good parent. He is so much of what a child would wish a parent to be. And Santa Claus is also what parents would wish themselves to be for their children. Dr. Duncan Littlefair, who was the minister who gave me a chance in the liberal ministry, this was back in 1978, he's also been my mentor for the Christmas season. Duncan once confided to me, saying, if the liberal church had only the Christmas season, and if it celebrated it as it could and should be celebrated, it would validate its existence on that basis alone. And Duncan is also the one who put me on to the significance of Santa Claus. I heard him speak to this in a Christmas season sermon 44 years ago in 1976. The title of the sermon was Santa Claus as Saint. Now, this sermon was given at a time when the Catholic Church was ridding itself of a number of its saints. And so Littlefair thought there might be an opportunity here to propose a new saint. And so he nominated Santa Claus as saint. And why? Because, as he said in that sermon, there Santa is at the North Pole. He's been there all year, busy working for you, thinking about you. And how could he find you? In all those houses, how? How could he find yours? And yet he does. And how does he know just what you've been hoping for? With all the children in the world, how could he keep track of everything and find just what you are hoping for? And yet he does. If you've never met another miracle in your life, you've met it there. And you know that the world is capable of being miraculous. What a beautiful figure, that round, jolly, red-faced, white-haired, long-bearded person. What a beautiful, loving, embracing warmth of a figure. So, the Christ child is a direct symbol of our truest self, and Santa Claus is a symbol of one who recognizes, honors, and encourages that truest self. Now, Santa Claus is particularly for children. Adults love Santa too because they remember what he meant to them, but Santa Claus is the one who is most immediately present to children. In the advertisement that I mentioned at the opening of my sermon, one of my thoughts in looking at it has been this: which of these two figures would appeal most to the heart of the young child? Would it be this serious and youthful portrait of Jesus, or this colorful, jolly figure with the twinkling eyes? It's no contest, no question, of course. It's Santa Claus. Nor do children relate as readily to the child in the manger. That child in the manger, that holy and divine infant, is primarily a symbol for adults. This doesn't mean that each can't relate to the other. They do. Children can feel some connection to the child in the manger. They see the loving parents, Mary and Joseph, and the animals, the shepherds, the wise men, and that glorious star that comes from afar. But Santa at the North Pole is really the one for them. So two adults can relate to Santa Claus, that most jolly and generous of all figures. But it's the child in the manger that is most touching to them. It's the story of that divine birth and that holiest of holy nights, that night that is most silent, most deep, most precious. Oh, holy night. And so children put on the Christmas pageants primarily for the adults. And yes, I've seen how the children enjoy playing the parts, shepherds, with hockey sticks for staffs batting each other about. The glorious angels with their diaphanous wings recently arrived from heaven. The wise men bearing their precious gifts for the infant. And Mary and Joseph, an opportunity to be a pretend parent. So the children enjoy more or less playing these parts. But it's the adults. It's the adults whose hearts are touched and whose eyes are moistened. So too, adults enjoy playing the Santa scene for children. They enjoy trying to portray that beautiful, loving, embracing warmth of a figure. They enjoy stepping into that glorious role of generosity and goodness with a mighty ho, ho, ho. But it's the children who are the recipients, and it's they who are excited and moved. You have only to watch young children as they await the arrival of Santa, or watch as they are about to be taken up into Santa's lap. Santa is a numinous figure for them, both fascinating and at times a little frightening, but a globe of ecstatic energy. For children, Santa Claus, of course, is taken as a literal figure. How could he not be? And how hard it is then for children to discover sooner or later that Santa Claus is a mythological figure, that he exists in the heart and the imagination and as a symbol and is not an actual person. Children will fight this knowledge for years. Sometimes they know he's not an actual person many years before they will let themselves consciously know this. You see, children are afraid they will lose Santa Claus, and what child would want to lose such a figure? And how hard it is then for adults, both younger and older adults, to find out that the Christ child is also a mythological figure, that he too exists in the heart and the imagination and as a symbol, that he's not literal, and that these Christmas stories are not factual historical accounts and events. Many adults will fight this knowledge for years. They know these stories are not historical, sometimes many years before they will let themselves consciously know that. For again, you see, they are afraid they will lose that eternal child, that divine Christ child. And what adult would want to lose such an image? But of course, it's not necessary to lose either Santa Claus or the divine Christ child. Both are spiritual symbols and not historical figures. I say this, the stories of the Christ child have as little to do with the historical person of Jesus of Nazareth as the stories of Santa Claus have to do with the historical personage of Saint Nicholas. But there are other truths than those of historical and literal truths, and these are truths of the heart and the mind and the imagination. Truths that are so important to us that we try to make them historical, literal, and concrete, forgetting that they are symbols. And we forget also that symbols have to do with the deeper, essential truths of our lives. Symbols pull together and embody the essence of things historical, and they pull together and embody the essence of what we might become and of what we are striving for. And is not this what Christmas is about? Bringing forward and living into and up to these symbols of the human heart and imagination and spirit. I'd like to conclude my message this morning with an account of an experience of living into the symbol of the Christmas story, and this from a member of the Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, the congregation I served as a minister here in Port Townsend before my retirement in 2018. This experience was related by a member of the congregation, Roger Delmar by name, who in a Christmas season service, spoke movingly of his discovery of what he called an internal Bethlehem. and internal Bethlehem that lifted and steadied him out of his profound despair and deep grief that occurred for him in the wake of the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Following, as I have, the lead of scholar Joseph Campbell, in which one goes beyond the literal and the historical, Roger spoke of his discovery of a new Christmas story for him, a story in which he heard the same angel's voice that the shepherds had heard in that long ago, faraway place. The voice was spoken, he said, not only to those shepherds, it was also spoken to him here and now. He heard it. In the midst of his confusion and despair, and in a drowsy, drifty, liminal space between wakefulness and sleep, the voice of an angel came to Roger saying, "Behold, behold, I bring you good tidings of a great joy. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Where, Roger wondered, did that angel's voice come from, and where might one find that manger, and who is our Christ child? Roger's answer, he's given me permission to quote him on this, was as follows. He said, "In the deep recesses of the soul, there is a manger, a sacred space, where my inherent divinity is met face to face, a wholeness, stability, and fullness of being is found to be the core of who I am. I am invited to listen, to hear the call from the voice of my soul, and to awaken to that Bethlehem." Listening to that voice, said Roger, awakening to that inner Bethlehem, finding that interior sacred space, we touch, he says, our true being. We tap into an internal strength, a peace with life in all its complexity that enlivens us no matter what problems we face and no matter what's going on in the world. Outwardly, he said, nothing alters, but somehow everything is different. So, the Christmas season, as Roger Delmar discovered, is the season of the eternal child, an image that revivified and reacquainted him with the most vital, tender, and sweetest aspects of himself. In this season for children, there is Santa Claus, that beautiful, loving, embracing warmth of a figure who knows and loves the heart and soul of a child. And for adults, there is the babe in the manger. What child is this? This is the eternal child who abides with us, the divine and holy Christ child within each and all of us. Haste, haste to bring him laud.